And we will move on to the second case for this morning, Winkler v. Rumsfeld, 053451. Mr. Sturgill?
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Lowell Sturgill from the Department of Justice representing the Secretary. Since 1937, the military has supported, with in-kind support, the Boy Scout Jamboree. It continues to provide that support and always has for important military reasons, and because the Jamboree is a unique event in the military's judgment in terms of the benefits it can provide.
Could I ask you right away one question, Mr. Sturgill? A lot of your brief, as I'm reading it, which may be not right, says that we shouldn't look at 2554 in isolation, that there are lots of other statutes that allow the military to provide similar sorts of support, and indeed 2554 didn't even exist for quite some time during this history. And I was interested in what authority you might have for giving a court guidance. Is, do we kind of canvass the entire U.S. Code every time we have a case like this, or is there some way to ascertain the universe of relevant statutes?
I think the first answer is that you don't have to look to the rest of the U.S. Code, because our primary argument is that this event is unique, and because it's unique, the military can provide the benefits that it has, and the statute is constitutional, even though the statute itself, 2554, only mentions the Jamboree. But to answer your question, if you do go beyond that and start looking more broadly, I think the Zelman case, Zelman versus Simmons-Harris, from the United States Supreme Court, the school voucher case, is the case you should look at. In that case, the Supreme Court held that in analyzing whether a student had truly voluntary private choice in choosing a private school or not, the court should look to all the options that were available. And some of the options were magnet schools and community schools. I would note that those programs were provided by separate state statutes. So I think that, again, it's permissible to look beyond a particular statute, Zelman says, and to look at other statutes. Again, the military has provided and considers this a unique event for several reasons. First of all, with respect to military training, supporting the Jamboree requires logistical support for a tent set, a virtual tent city of 30 or 40,000 people, and it provides unique training opportunities that the military needs for support of activities like in Iraq and Hurricane Katrina, where it does similar kinds of things. In fact, I'm told that a lot of the military people who were helping with the Jamboree in past years then went on and did similar sorts of
things. Counsel,
in
an uncertain world, one thing you can be certain of is two members of this court were never members of the Boy Scout troops or know anything about it. What specific part of the Boy Scout training do you think the military benefits from in the Jamboree?
Well, for example, logistical support. The military has to provide medical support, security support, working with contractors.
That is the military working with, it's not the Boy Scouts training that provides the military with any. It's the military gets the benefit of working with the Boy Scouts.
Yes, exactly. In fact, I think that's the main difference between our position and the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs see this whole program as a huge giveaway for the Boy Scouts.
And let me ask you this then. From that point of view, if, for example, as has happened a few times over the years, the Pope wanted to come to the United States and the Catholic Church wanted to sponsor its own Jamboree someplace, they could go to Fort A.P. Hill also. I mean, I assume all of those logistical measures that you're talking about would be just as valuable from the military point of view, the experience with putting up a tent city and the experience with supporting that number of people, even though it would be the Catholic Church that would be the beneficiary, I'm trying to suggest an institution that no one would disagree is in fact a religious institution.
Yes.
Because
I wish you had picked the Methodist. But
well, you know, it's happened before with the Pope, so I'm trying to be realistic. In other words, I don't want us to get off on a discussion right now about whether the Boy Scouts is primarily a secular organization or whether it's religious or whatever it is. But do you think that having the military support such a meeting would be permissible?
Potentially, that raises a lot of different questions. One of which is, first of all, it would be permissible because it would provide a military benefit. But again,
benefit to the church. I mean, somebody would have to buy those services out in the market if the military weren't providing them for free, right?
Well, if you take the Supreme Court's decisions on aid to schools, religious schools, for example, Board of Education versus Allen, the court has held that the government may provide secular support even to pervasively sectarian religious institutions. That case was the loaning of textbooks.
But that's in a non-discriminatory context, which is why I asked the first question that I did, because as I read that line of school cases, it relies very much on principles that later on show up in cases like Rosenberger. You know, if you're going to provide certain assistance to group A of students and group B and group C, you're going to provide it also to the religious students. You're going to have a neutral, even-handed policy. But if you've singled out only, you know, your unique religious students, it looks a little different.
Well, I would say that the plaintiffs have turned this case into basically an equal protection kind of a case, and our main response to that is they haven't shown in the record that the Catholic Church or any institution has ever requested and been denied similar treatment to the Boy Scouts. And without that kind of proof, they can't prove a discrimination case or an equal protection case, or dress it up however you like. They can't prove it on this record. And the mere fact that the statute itself mentions only the Jamboree reflects the fact that the military has had this relationship since 1937. So Congress did the obvious thing and said, well, this seems to be working. It's producing military benefits. We'll write a statute and provide permanent authority for this.
It's kind of an odd statute at this point with its ratchet, it seems to me, because if some other organization, you know, Young Men of America or something, were to arise and lots of people who are now Boy Scouts decided that for whatever reason, was more attractive and the membership of the Boy Scouts dropped in half, I guess they still get all the same amount of money, right?
Well, the Secretary can always find that that the support should not be as great if it would detract from the military mission.
Well, national security, it says. It's hard for me to see how national security would be implicated.
Well, I think if the Secretary decides the money is better spent on other guns or
so
whatever,
that's a pretty broad power then. Okay.
I should also mention the public relations and recruitment aspects of the Jamboree, which, are unique. There's one of the congressmen, in commenting on the new statute, pointed out really an amazing fact. 70%, he said, of the students in the United States military academies were once Boy Scouts.
Wow.
And I think that shows you what an effective recruitment tool this is.
It's a recruitment tool for the academy, but the Army doesn't function just the academy graduates. It functions in the rest. Has anybody ever done a study to find out how many former Boy Scouts enlisted in the military?
The record does show us, not a comprehensive study, but the record does show a number of critical responses to that. One is, for example, in the joint statement of facts, it shows that three-quarters of an Army platoon or a unit at Fort Rucker was always Boy Scouts. And also, the record shows that great numbers of generals and officers and notable personalities were Boy Scouts, Togo West, and I've forgotten all the rest of them, but a large number of them were Boy Scouts.
Now, your argument, if I'm understanding you correctly so far, is on the merits half of this case, right? But you began in your brief with a lengthy discussion of standing.
Yes.
So I wondered if you are conceding that there is standing or whether you're still arguing that we ought to not even worry about the merits.
Oh, no, you should dismiss this for lack of standing. We're just trying to be responsive to the questions. But yes, for two reasons. First of all, the plaintiffs lack taxpayer standing to bring this suit. And second, the suit is not redressable. With respect to taxpayer standing, the key case is Valley Forge. Valley Forge involved a case where the government had given away what used to be a military hospital to a private religious organization. And the Supreme Court said there was no taxpayer standing because that was authorized by the property clause, not by the taxing and spending clause. And we have the same kind of thing here. We have the military clauses of the Constitution, obviously, provide authority for the military support of the jamboree. You don't have to look to the taxing and spending clause.
But, of course, the taxing clause does say to support the common defense. I mean, it seems to me that there's quite a bit of overlap in this particular area between Congress's power to provide for the military and Congress's power to tax. What do we do in these dual support situations?
I think you have to go back to the FLAST itself, and Bowen versus Kendrick. Both of those cases acknowledge that the FLAST doctrine is that it's supposed to be a narrow exception to the general rule against taxpayer standing. And the problem with the plaintiff's position is that it would blow that limitation up, because the taxing and spending power is so broad that it's possible to link just about any government action to the taxing and spending clause.
This court's recent decision in Freedom from Religion Foundation versus Chow sort of blow that up?
I don't think so. Because I think the important thing about Chow is that it involved a program that at least was tangentially related to the grant to disbursements of funds to grantees. That's what Bowen versus Kendrick said that FLAST should apply to. It allows taxpayers to challenge disbursement programs. Now, our argument in that case was that there wasn't enough of the relationship's too tangential, because no grants were actually made at the conferences the plaintiffs were challenging. The court didn't agree with that. But again, if you look at the case, at least there was some connection, tangential to a grant program. This is not a grant program at all.
Isn't there language in the statute that actually says that it's got to be appropriation neutral? What am I thinking about here? Yeah.
The new statute says that certain of the provisions are subject to appropriations. That's the older statute has several provisions. This is kind of interesting. It gets us into what we think is the overbreadth of the district court's ruling.
Well, the statute, in other words, that was before the district court, because the newer statute was passed after her ruling, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The statute before the district court allows the military to provide several kinds of support. One is loans of equipment. Now, as I read the district court's order, she's enjoining the government from continuing to do that. But the plaintiffs have given up on that. They say, I think rightly so, that that's beyond the authority. They don't have taxpayer standing to challenge that. It's just like Valley Forge. It's a loan. The same thing with the leases. Plaintiffs, I thought at first, were saying we couldn't lease the property to the Boy Scouts. But they're not saying that anymore, and they couldn't because of Valley Forge. So those are two provisions that are no longer part of the case. But the loan provision itself does say that it's supposed to be not involve appropriations. So you're right. That's not part of the case anymore. I think what they're challenging is the expenditures for personnel services and logistical support, which is still part of the case. But again, they lack standing to challenge that. Because that's authorized by the military clauses. The two circuits that have addressed this, we rely on the 10th and the 3rd circuits. So I think you should just follow them.
But you made the argument in your brief that when the military personnel are doing that, you said, well, you know, we have to pay them anyway. You know, they show up to work, and whether we assign them to the jamboree or whether we assign them to, you know, marching across the desert is really our business. It's not actually in that sense a cost to the government. Now, maybe there are some things, medical supplies or little badges that people can get or what have you, that are costs.
Right. With respect to the redressability point, we have also said that the case, they lack standing because the military could continue to provide precisely the same support for the jamboree as it has done since 1937, before Congress enacted Section 2554. It could continue the same exact thing. And all the district court's order does is prohibit the government from supporting the jamboree under the jamboree statute, Section 2554.
Which is once again why I began trying to get some sense from you as to what statute or statutes you think are really before us, because your standing argument seems to say that there's actually nothing in particular, aside from perhaps something symbolic, that 2554 accomplishes. let's put to one side the, you know, the future-oriented, you always have to spend the same amount of money aspect, but as to the support. So in that sense, it sounds to me like you really are saying we need to look at this whole package of statutes.
Well, I don't think you need to, again, because
that's your redressability point, though, isn't it? That there's nothing to be done, so you get rid of this statute and the same harm is still there.
Well, even if you forget about all the other statutes we mentioned in our brief, even without any statute like that, 2012, for example, the military was supporting the Jamboree before any of those were enacted. You know, when Congress gives the military money for support always comes out of the operations and maintenance budget.
Greening your rebuttal considerably.
Perhaps I should try to save some time.
You might.
You're
Judge
welcome
Wood,
to. What, you can have another. We've been talking to you, so you may save your last minute, and we'll probably give you an extra.
I don't want to not well. Answer your question.
No,
either,
no. You can meditate, and we'll hear from others, and we'll continue later.
Thank you.
We'll meditate too, so we can all meditate.
Morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'd like to address Judge Wood's question about the Pope, because 37 years after the first Boy Scout Jamboree was held on the Mall in Washington, the Pope held a funeral mass on the Mall in Washington, and of course that put some strain on the municipal fisc, as additional police and this sort of thing had to be brought to the situation. And that was upheld by the D.C. Circuit in the case of O'Hare v. Andrus, which we've cited in our brief.
Which I have right here. It was about $100,000 or so.
I think in the Jamboree situation, it's useful to kind of separate out the kinds of support that the military has provided, some of which is really in the O'Hare v. Andrus sense, that when the Boy Scouts are at Fort A.P. Hill, the civil authority, as it were, for that particular territory is that of the United States military, and they would have to perform the same sorts of duties as the D.C. municipal employees would have had to in that situation. That's one category. There's a rather large category, which is really military self-promotion. You know, the bands and the flyovers and the flags and the exhibits and the tanks and the artillery, and much is made by our adversaries about the cookie dough. Well, that's because they're giving out cookies to get the boys to come into the military exhibit. You get to have a cookie. If it were my money, I think I would give them keychains, because the 13 or 14-year-olds hit the cookies pretty hard. So that's the second category. And the third category is very mission-related stuff. The Boy Scouts, of course, are known for first aid, and so all the first line and second line first aid is the Boy Scouts. But when you get up to the sort of field hospital level, that's where the military is stepping in, practicing its skills for the field. One of my colleagues said that he took his son there, and the noticed that they were doing blood work with slides and a microscope, very kind of old-fashioned thing to do. And he says, what's going on here? And he said, well, we can't use the equipment that we'd have down the road in the hospital in Fredericksburg. We have to practice using what we would have on the field in Afghanistan or Iraq out in the desert. So we have those three things. One, they're the authority and place support. Two, stuff which is really provided by the military for its own purposes at an event, and they're really supporting the event more than anything else, an event where at least 6 out of 7 people that come to the event are not are participating in it as campers, but are just visitors to it. And the third category being very mission-related work. And so it is unique, because nobody else presents these precise types of opportunities to the military, even though they do, as the ACLU points out in its pages 51 and 57 of its brief, support a whole bunch of civilian organizations for example, security for the Special Olympics and the Goodwill Games and things like that. And there's a Girl Scout statute, which is not entirely parallel to the Boy Scout statute, because the Girl Scouts program is different, and they don't have a national jamboree. They just have a world jamboree. So,
although, as I recall, this statute would cover a world jamboree for the Boy Scouts, too, if they
wanted
to have one.
That's right. If they were to host a world jamboree, I think it would cover that.
Yeah.
If there are no other questions, Court.
Thank you very much. Mr. Schwartz?